Hello, this is Margarita Monet from Edge of Paradise, and you are listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast, the ultimate dive into albums, bands, and stories that made metal what it is today. I'm your host, Blake, and together we'll explore the sounds, the legends, and the anthems that keep the metal flame alive. Don't forget to visit our main website, themetalpit.org, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit. And for all podcast-related stuff, head to The Metal Pit podcast.com and on Facebook and Instagram at the Metal Pit Podcast. And you can also check out our YouTube channel, which is at the Metal Pit 666. And today we're going to talk some Judas Priest, and I'll introduce my guest, who's been on a few episodes, of course, and he's from the Metal Pit, and that's Eric. How you doing today, Eric?
Hey, Blake, I'm doing great, man. How about yourself? Pretty jacked about
Good.
this podcast.
Yes, and now I want to mention, so Halloween was like the anniversary of the new version of the Metal Pit. It's been around whatever, 5 years, 4 years, I can't remember the new version. So I decided, so this is going to be, so our last podcast was we had a contest on a thrash podcast that we did, and it's probably been a couple of weeks since we've had a new episode. So here we are, and I'm saying this is season three of the podcast now. So this is episode one of season three. And so we're starting with Judas Priest. But before I get to that, again, so I just mentioned the contest. And so our winner was, I'm just going to use his YouTube name, I think was Skowalker. So if you go onto our YouTube channel and look under our podcast playlist and find the Thrash one, he commented his top list there if you want to check him out. And a few other people entered through YouTube, and a few people and bunch of others entered through emails. But anyway, he was the winner of our thrash metal whatever podcast contest thing. So thanks to everybody that entered, and I'm sorry we can only have one winner. Hopefully we'll do something like that again next anniversary, hopefully. Okay, and so before we get to the Judas Priest, I'm going to talk about a few other classic metal bands, I guess. Iron Maiden are going on their 50th anniversary tour, which is crazy to kind of think that they've been
Really, really is.
around. Of course, that's not when their first album was 1980, so 44 years of, but of course they just started their band in 74, I guess that works out. Yes. And so yeah, so they're going on their Run for Your Lives tour, and it starts off May next year in Budapest, Hungary. And they're only playing songs, I believe, from their first nine studio albums. So that's from the debut album up to Fear of the Dark before Bruce left the band for a few years. So they're only doing songs from those nine albums, which is interesting. And the openers in May and June are, first it starts with Hailstorm, and then the Raven's Age joins them, which is of course Steve Harris's son plays is in that band, the Raven's Age. And then in July, Avatar is their opener, but that goes up till August, and they don't have any more dates on their website for that yet. Now, Iron Maiden was just in Toronto actually like 2 weeks ago, but I didn't go, so I missed it. And then another tour, Metallica has expanded their M72 World Tour, adding new North American dates. And I know for spring and summer of next year, and they are coming to Toronto. I'm not sure if I'll get to go, but I'll think about it anyway. But they're doing the two-night thing still, where they play a different set list each night, which is kind of cool. They don't play the same songs every night. And some of the opening acts for them are Pantera, Limp Bizkit, Suicidal Tendencies, and Ice Nine Kills. And of course, Don, and I want to mention, I'm Canadian, of course, but Eric's there in the United States. And I thought I would congratulate Donald Trump on becoming president, because I'm sure he's listening right now.
He might be a closet metalhead.
As his buddy there in Iced Earth, John Schaefer. I just had a little thing that he received probation after cooperating with investigators in the January 6th Capitol riot case, as he was one of the first ones to plead guilty and was credited for his quick acceptance of responsibility in that. So maybe that means it'll be a new Iced Earth album. I have no idea. If they're even still a band, I don't know. Okay, so we're gonna get to Judas Priest. Now, I've already done a few Judas Priest episodes, so I'm gonna maybe, and I'm not gonna, because I don't even know if I remembered when I did first hear Judas Priest. It might have been the album we're gonna talk about. We're gonna talk about the sixth album, British Steel. But Eric, since you haven't been on a Judas Priest podcast episode yet, when did you first hear Judas Priest, if you can remember?
I had a feeling this question was coming. I want to say, my sister played some Priest back in the day. I'm pretty sure it was actually Unleashed in the East. So that came out in 79. And I'll say a little something about that album later, maybe when we wrap up the when we maybe jump into the top 10 Priest albums. But I would say it was Unleashed in the East. I didn't know the song titles. And definitely like one of those, I think I want to say, Breaking the Law, that video of Breaking the Law was on Headbangers Ball. And actually it was even metal. You know what? I want to say it was, Metal Half Hour, which actually that predates, Headbangers Ball here on MTV. I know you guys had that. It wasn't much music. So it was up in Canada, but yeah, I saw the video for Breaking the Law on the Metal Half Hour. I was pretty stoked. Got home from school, fired it up, and that was actually the first video that played on one weekday. And I was like, "Oh, this is great, man! It's catchy. It's pretty rocking." I dug it. It's a comical, comical video. Obviously, you've seen it.
Yeah, it's been a while, I guess, since I've seen. Yes. Now, I think, now I don't remember what episode. See, I don't know if you listened to our Judas Priest episodes. I can't remember which one it was, but I remember, I think Green Man Alishi is the first song I heard played by Judas Priest. Of course, it's not a Judas Priest song, it's a Fleetwood
Correct.
Mac song. But I think I had it on, I had a various cassette of guitar in the 80s or some stupid thing like that. And I think that song was on it, the live version from Unleashed in the East.
So good.
And I liked that song. And I think that could have been the first time I heard Judas Priest, but you know, it's hard to really go back and listen for sure. But I do know I got like vinyls, I got Hellbent for Leather, I got, of course, this one we're doing the sixth one, sixth studio album, British Steel. So I definitely had that. So, but anyway, yeah. So I think it might have been that mixtape cassette I had thing, various artists on it.
I
That,
remember those days.
yeah. So,
They're fuzzy, but yeah.
but I don't have that. I couldn't find it anymore, so it must have ended up in some garbage somewhere. But anyway, so well, anybody that doesn't know Judas Priest, well. Very briefly, since I think most people do know if they're listening to this, they're from Birmingham, England, got their start in 1969, and they've sold over 50 million albums. And let's see, while their music in the 70s, excuse me, was groundbreaking, pushing the boundaries of heavy metal, they struggled with mediocre production and little commercial success until this album that really. Even though Hellbent for Leather, which is what year is that one? Let's see it. 78. That was a pretty good one, but this is the one that kind of put them, I don't know, I want to say over the top, but into the spotlight anyway. And they've released 19 studio albums. And their most recent one was just, well, is this year, Invincible Shield. Now, and later we are going to do our top 10 Judas Priest albums. But for me, I haven't really listened to Judas Priest since Painkiller. So you can probably guess that I'm not going to have any of the seven after that in my top 10 list because I haven't really listened to them that much. And
And
have
that's okay.
you've continued to listen to them though, haven't you, Eric?
I wasn't really keen on them, and I do like the Ripper, but I just wasn't really keen on the Ripper with Priest. It just wasn't quite the same. But yeah, I have their last two albums, and I'll keep some things a mystery for the top 10.
Yeah. And I will say the lineup for British Steel, which is a long time. Well, this is actually the first album where Dave Holland was on the drums, but it had the other four were long time stays there. Ian Hill on bass, Glenn Tipton and KK Downing on guitars, and of course, Rob Halford on vocals. And we're gonna get, I don't think there's anything else I have to ask before we start. No, let's get into it. Now we're doing the original US Canada, whatever, North American release. So if you happen to go on Spotify, the songs might be in a different order than they are for us. But I'm going off my vinyl and we're starting with Breaking the Law. And what do you think of Breaking the Law?
Oh boy. Well, we talked about it briefly at the outset of the podcast, but I can't help but think about the Beavis and Butthead, the one episode where they're going through the washing the dog. So that always kind of cracks me up. A few of my buddies, we used to get a kick out of that one. It's just one of those songs where it's one of Judas Priest's shortest songs. It's under 2.5 minutes. But I played this song in several bands back in my heyday. Again, it's a short and simple song, but the key to like so many Priest songs is that it's instant ear bliss. It's memorable. Halford just has that hook to it. The music's steady and driving. It's a great tune. What do you think of it, Blake?
And I just pulled up the set list thing where they show how many songs they played live, and this is played this one the third highest of all their songs. And we can probably guess the other two, but we'll
Oh
see.
yeah.
One's another one from this album.
Yes, I was going to guess that.
And then the other one is an album I mentioned already
Off
too.
Screaming.
No, Hellbent for Leather, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's their second most thing. And then four is You've Got Another Thing Coming.
There
Yeah.
you go. Okay.
Okay, back to where I was. Sorry. Oh yes. Oh, and I read somewhere, I don't remember where it said that I think in 79 Judas Priest toured with AC/DC, and Rob Halford said they kind of got influenced by AC/DC a little bit, and that might be why, you said the song is simple, and that's what, no offense, I love AC/DC, but
Me
it's
too.
simple. They do some simple songs, and it's just you create an opening riff and it's iconic just because it's easy, like Smoke on the Water, whatever, that's easy, but it's just memorable and everybody loves it, and it was just, and of course I guess everybody likes Breaking the Law, I don't know. But anyway, but yes, and people are going to say, oh, it's been played too much, of course, like you say. But it's played too much because it's a great classic metal song, I guess. And actually, I do have an interesting fact that I don't know if people know, but there was a sound of breaking glass at the, is it at the start of the song? I forget, but it's in the song anyway. And they actually used milk bottles to create the sound of
Oh,
breaking glass.
yeah, it's in the bridge. Yeah, I
Okay.
read that
Oh,
recently too.
right. Yeah. Because I don't know, I guess they couldn't afford I don't know, couldn't afford to break glass except milk bottle glass, which I guess was years ago when milk came in glass bottles. Okay, then we go to rapid fire. I'm gonna let you start on every song since there's only the two of us.
Okay. I appreciate it, Blake. Yeah, this is the album that I pretty much would not shut up to you about. So I appreciate you taking me up on this one and kind of giving in. But yes, Rapid Fire. This is just such a relentless track. I read in Hip Parader many moons ago that this is considered the first speed metal song ever written. I believe it off the top of my head. I wasn't a big Motorhead fan. I know Motorhead's been around a long time, but and Exodus was out in 78, but as you mentioned before, their first album, when did it come out? Like you said, 84, 85, Bonded by Blood?
84, I think. Yeah.
84, yeah. I was kind of surprised to kind of see that. And I have the cassette actually. But yeah, it's such a great tune. I got to say that Leaving a Trail of Destruction that's second to none. I love how they really kind of wrap that up. And the solos have these quick pull-offs, and the use of chromatic notes is awesome, man. There's just so much visceral energy in that song by not only, Halford, obviously, he's a front man, but the rest of the band, they bring their A game on that song. So I love that song, man. I always wanted to play that one in a band, but not too many of the bandmates were as enthused.
Yes, and I read where I think it was Max Cavalera of, I'm saying his name right, of Sepultura,
That's right, Sepultura.
said that Judas Priest like you just said about how this song or maybe some this album influenced thrash metal too. He said that Metallica probably would say that too, and that Metallica wouldn't have been where they are without this album or whatever. Now, I don't know if I really kind of thought that as I listened to it today again, but I don't think I ever thought that back then. But now, yes, I can see the especially I think so, especially on the next song, but also on this song too. But
Yep, you can definitely
do
hear
you
some of those
remember when I had
influences.
this album? I
Definitely.
always loved the first four songs so much, but we'll get to why I don't like United that much. But anyway, yes, that's a heavy song, and yeah, Rapid Fire is a good song. Then we go to what I just kind of mentioned, the metal. Oh, sorry, Metal Gods. What do you think of that one? This one.
What a legendary anthem. So for my first Judas Priest concert, this song was actually the highlight of the show. You got a solid main riff. The chorus has these layered harmonies, which Halford shines on. I was so impressed. I still to this day don't really know how they did it, but now they sing Metal Gods. They sing the chorus. I won't sing it. I won't attempt to. But then they amp up that guitar part, that down, da da down. They did it live too, and I was still kind of mesmerized. Obviously, it's some kind of boost they do live. But it's just kind of one of those things that stood with me. And then the solo's great. And I mean, live, Halford absolutely drilled it. I mean, it just sounded so good. So, yeah, it's a great song, man. I love this song. What's your take on it, Blake?
Yeah, and as I was listening to this one today, I felt this one was more maybe of a thrash thing to me. Some of the probably the intro there, like the heavy riffs there, it sounds more like
Meaty.
a thrash like influence, or that they were influencing thrash, I mean. And of course, Metal Gods, of course, is something that it's funny that they. Me, I mean, it was a sixth album, but like I said, this really is the album that kind of got them going. And now they've had 19 albums, and they are, well, Metal Gods.
Well said.
And now Rob Halford's playing singing with Dolly Parton, but whatever. And did you hear that song yet? I don't know. I never heard
I have not. I heard that he had teamed up with her, and I was like, okay.
But anyway, that's
Anyway, right?
cool, it'll be recognized by Dolly Parton, I guess, for Rob Halford, I mean. Okay. Oh, and then I guess interesting fact, there's metallic clanging sounds were created using cutlery. I don't know. I guess things are a lot different now when you don't have to use your own household things for sound effects. Then we get to number four, which this could the title of the track could definitely sound like a thrash song, Grinder. And what do you think of this one?
This track has a gallop to it, not quite the same way that Maiden does, but it does have that gallop to it. And I really like the balance of aggression and I mentioned musicality, Halford's voice, but the music's it's pretty damn heavy, especially for 1980, if you think about it. I really dig those pinch harmonics that the KK Downey lays down. And also one thing, it's a little more subtle, I guess, for the average hard rock heavy metal fan, but it's a dynamic that Priest does pretty well in this particular song, where they actually amp it up at the end, where there's more down picking, and it's a bit heavier, kind of to really punctuate the ending of the song. I thought that was a pretty smart way and a powerful way to end the track.
And I look back at this set list again, and it says Grinder has been played the 17th most times by Judas Priest live. So that puts four of the songs on this album in their top 17 that they play live. And this was their sixth album, but I'm not going to get into. And it's funny, I see Turbo Lover on this list. I'm not sure if that's going to be in their top tens, but it's just funny to see that is one of their top like 15 out songs they played live. But anyway, you already mentioned the song. Yeah, it's a good song too. And like I say, I know I always used to love the first four songs in the album. Now the next one is called United, and not that there's anything wrong with it. It's more of a song made for playing in an arena, I think. And so, what do you think of United?
Yeah, you know, Blake, I like how you put that. It is definitely like one of those, and I never thought of it this way. It does have that vibe of like an arena rock song. It's definitely more commercial. Like that's the first thing I thought of. Maybe not as a teenager, but you know, as I got older, I was like, yeah, this is definitely kind of more. They're certainly trying to broaden, you know, their audience a bit. While it's not my favorite song on this album, it's grown on me over the years. It's not one of my top favorite Pre songs at all. But you know, the drums, vocals, and guitars do mesh well together, and you know, the chorus is crazy catchy. But yeah, it's a decent song. And you're not thrilled with it, right, Blake?
Well, I mean, yeah, like I said, it is kind of made for playing, like, so do you get the crowd involved? And you see a lot of groups do that still today. They have a song, if you know, oh, that's a song, so they can get the crowd singing it in the concerts and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's just. I mean, the first four songs were awesome, I thought, when I used to listen to this album the whole time. And then I just thought, oh, I was just let it down a little by United, but whatever. Still, yeah, but yeah, it's a song to play live. And then well, yeah, if we have a record, we turn the record over because there's five, yes, there's only three, no, there's four songs on the side, sorry. Okay. And the first track is You Don't Have to Be Old to Be Wise, which is kind of a weird title for a heavy metal song. But anyway, what do you think of this song?
It's funny that you should comment on the title of the song because I'm looking at it and I'm like, what a long song title. But anyway, this is a nice like mid-tempo hard rock song. I really like how during the verses the power chords are ringing out with the steady eighth note bass playing of Ian's, and then Dave's got that persistent drumming, you know, with the hi-hat, snare, and the kick. And yeah, Halford sounds really good on this song. This is actually, it's kind of funny. I feel like this song is one I probably have overlooked. Like when you go through Priest, you know, canon, which I mean, you mentioned they have 19 studio albums, which that's just otherworldly, especially these days. But I think this song might be a little bit underrated. It's a good song. It's catchy. It has that steady pace to it. It certainly wouldn't like make it like a true greatest hits album, but I like it. It definitely fits on the album. It's like a perfect spot on the album.
Well, it says like the lyrics trying to capture a youthful defiance, expressing frustration with the idea of waiting till you're old to make your mark or whatever. And but this is saying old to be wise, but I think a lot of people are do have to be old to be wise. And I'm still not there yet, but I'm getting older, so one of these days I'll hit it.
We'll get there.
But anyway, yeah, it's not one of my favorite songs on the album, and of course, you got another classic one coming up after it, so I'm sure it's left off the radar by most people just because now we have Living After Midnight. One of the other, this is the third, what this was the third most song they've played live. So, do you like Living After Midnight?
This is one of my personal favorite hard rock, heavy metal anthems of the 80s decade, which is saying something. You think about all those big hits from the 1980s from hard rock and heavy metal bands. But here's a prime example of like a simple four chord song, how it can achieve greatness. Obviously, it never hurts to have a solid rhythm section and one of the most gifted metal vocalists ever, but this is a well-crafted song. It's funny. I didn't even write down the solo, but like the solo, obviously, it even kind of follows the vocal melody to some degree. And but I mean, it fits the song to a T. It sounds good. I like everything about the song.
And this is, I guess this one became a hit single. I don't know, called why it says that exactly. But apparently, Halford was up late recording during recording sessions, and he said, I'm living after midnight. And that's why they had the name of the song. And of course, it's about, living fast, staying up late, partying,
Partying
whatever.
hard. Yep.
And it's for night owls and party goers alike. But yeah, it's, and again, like you said, it's a simple track. Again, maybe back to the AC/DC idea of writing a song. Let's just make it easy. And people seem to love the easy songs sometimes more than they do, more complicated ones. Probably because it's easier for them to play it too. Okay, then we go on to The Rage. And what do you think of The Rage?
What a cool and unique intro with like the smooth bass line with a pausing, like it has those rests, and then it has these just simple, these like little like dyad guitar chords that are really soft. It's dynamic, it's pretty quiet. And then it just builds up and hits you with that main riff. Man, that's just masterfully done. There's a lesson on bending and vibrato by the guitarist on this one. Man, it's great. And this is another track. I didn't make note of this, but this is one because I know the album like the back of my hand, but I listened to it earlier and Halford absolutely kills it on this track, man. He's got such a range. He still can hit those notes. I saw him, I want to say, was it 20, was it 2021? And he was still hitting some really freaking high notes. It's pretty scary. A little more delay to to some of the screams, but he was still hitting some high notes. Do you like this one, Blake?
I guess this is be the most, I don't know, more of an experimental track on the album, I guess. It's a little different. Do you hear any reggae inspired bass at the start of this? That's what I read. One person thought that it had some reggae
You know
inspired
what?
vibe.
Yeah, I could hear that. I was trying to kind of figure it out. It feels a little bluesy. I could definitely, yeah, I'm not no expert on reggae,
Yeah.
but the funny part is the guitar part to me sounds a little reggae with those higher that de-gant, de-gant, de-dant, de-dant, with the delay that kind of reminded me a little bit of a reggae. But I can hear now that you mention that, that genre with the bass line, I could hear that too. It's kind of a bluesy, kind of reggae, kind of maybe a kind of a hybrid of the two.
Now again, I don't mind the song, but then we go into the next one, which I we just come off on the Living After Midnight, one of their best, I guess you could say, or one of my favorites. And then the one after this is also one of my favorites. So it's kind of, it's like, oh, I don't like this song when you're comparing it to the one in front of it and the one behind it. But what do you think of Stealer?
Well, here's another one that I'm sure influenced James Hetfield of Metallica and Scott Ian of Anthrax, and I'm sure some other guitar players too. This is an up-tempo rocker. We've got some speed ascending legato soloing by Glenn Tipton here, man. It is smoldering. I really, the bridge stands out to me. That middle section has some really strong vocals from Rob, and then the guitarists are ringing, sustaining these chords. But then they get into these really nice down picking, and that's where I pull up the Hetfield, the Scott Ian. Or you can hear like maybe a little Overkill or Testament influence on those guys because they're really chugging down picking there. It's pretty aggressive. I think it's clever how they have the same tempo and feel during the outro of the song, yet they introduce these two new guitar parts. But the song does not relent. Man, what a fitting, what a fitting track, man. It's so awesome.
It's a great way to close the album if you're going by the
And that's what I wrote.
original.
Yep. I
Yeah, the
held off on
original.
saying it, but you said it. Yep. What a fitting closer. You read my
Yes, if you
mind.
go by the original release, I don't know what they did on the other release, but it doesn't, I'm not looking it up now. But anyway, yes, it's a great finishing song and on the album. And it's one of my, I mean, I guess. Probably I don't know. Like I said, I really like those first four songs and Living After Midnight, Stealer. So there's like six of the nine songs that I really love. And so the other three just probably get left off in my brain just because of those ones that I like so much.
So many great tunes, man.
Yes.
It's jam-packed.
Okay. And so I guess we're going to rate this out of 10. So what are you going to give it out of 10?
So off the top of my head, I've got what I consider to be 10 to 12 perfect albums. This is one of them.
Oh, okay.
So Blake, it's a 10 out of 10. I dare say 11 out of 10, but we'll keep it 10 out of 10. What is your rating on this masterpiece?
See, you're more of a Judas Priest fan than I am.
I am.
Even though back in the early day, like when I got into heavy metal, Iron Maiden first, and then I probably got into Judas Priest after that, because I heard Iron Maiden first. And I have the whatever five or six of the studio albums back then of those albums, and Painkiller, I think, maybe Ram It Down, I think I have on vinyl too. But then, like I said earlier, I just kind of stopped listening to them after that. But anyway, it's still a great album. I haven't listened to it in a while, like a few times on my playlist on Spotify, Living After Midnight would come on, or the Breaking the Law, of course, would come on. But yeah, so I'm not gonna give it a 10, but I would give it, like, see, if I was back then, I probably would have gave it a 10 back in the when it came out, and when I mm-hmm. not when it came out, because I didn't listen to it then, because I didn't start listening to heavy metal till like 1982. But anyway, when I heard it, I know I love those first four songs, like I said. So I'd give it a 9, I guess. I'll give it a 9.
That's a pretty nice rating.
I think that's probably what I would have gave it back then. Now, if the album came out today, I probably wouldn't give it that. But still, I do love 6 of the 9 songs. So that's pretty good. Okay, now Seeing Them Live, you mentioned that briefly in there. You want to talk anything else about Seeing Them Live, or how many times?
So let's see, Seeing Them Live. I know I wish I could have seen them as much as I've seen Iron Maiden, but you know, when I've seen them, they've always delivered. You know, Halford just, he pulls it off, and you know, the guitar playing is always stellar. Whoever's playing, you know, the rhythm section, the drums and the bass, they, you know, they're always really tight. And sometimes overlooked, I think. Yeah, Scott Travis, man, the double bass. I always thought that was a great addition, having him on Painkiller and Beyond. Man, he definitely injected like this extra energy for the band, which you can definitely feel on some of the more recent releases, and Painkiller, of course. But you know, the one thing I wanted to mention, one of my, you know, sometimes some of these older albums, I'm not a super huge live album person. But Unleashed in the East is one of those albums that definitely, that's like the pinnacle for me for Judas Priest, like, and for live albums. It's one of my absolute favorites. It's, you know, Live After Death is going to be number one for me, but Unleashed in the East is right there. There's so much energy on there, and Halford, you can't cover it up live. I mean, some of those notes that he's hitting with Victim of Changes, like that song on Sad Wings of Destiny, I'll get to it in our top 10. But it's one thing to have in the studio, but then it's another thing, like, several years later for them to go live. A little bit better technology, and wow, that Victim of Changes really stands out. And The Sinner, I love the original, but The Sinner on Unleashed in the East is, it's like just dripping, like it's saturating, like just dripping metal. You know, man, it's just such a awesome piece, man. You can feel the energy from the band. So I wish, you know, if I was a little bit older, maybe I would have seen that one back in the day. But that album came out in 79. But Priest has delivered. I've only seen them a few times live, but they always come through. Did you ever catch Priest live?
I think I only seen them once.
There you go. That's right. You did say you saw them a while back. That's right.
And I don't remember much of it. I think it was, who's, I'm trying to remember. I think Helix, Canadian band Helix, was one of the openers.
Okay.
And I can't remember who the other opener was, because it could have been Yngwie, but that might have been for Dio. I can't remember. I'd have to look.
He opened for Maiden in 86.
Yeah, I don't think I seen Yngwie with Maiden. It was either with Dio or with Judas Priest.
Okay.
Remember, it doesn't matter anyway, really. You know that Helix was one of the bands, just because I listened to Helix a lot since they were Canadian and stuff. Okay, so we're gonna finish this episode off with, after Eric's suggestion of the top 10 Priest albums. And like I said at the start, since I kind of stopped listening to it after Painkiller, I didn't really listen too much. I might have played a few spun them a few times, but I didn't really get into anything after that. Not that there's anything wrong with them. I got into more some of the heavier stuff, maybe, and more thrash or whatever. So I guess I'll go first because I think you have more to say. And then I'll have stuff to say after about the podcast. So,
Excellent.
okay. So my number 10, I've got Turbo Lover, or no, Turbo, sorry. The album's called Turbo. And even though a lot of people didn't like the album, and I don't really like the album that much either, but like I say, they've had 19 albums. I'm not sure. There's at least seven of them that I didn't really listen to much. The ones after Painkiller are six, maybe it's six. So anyway, but there's a few songs on Turbo that I don't mind, and I don't even mind Turbo Lover. I don't really like the synthesizers, but yeah, it's okay. No, I didn't write the years down of these albums, but anyway, my number nine is Stained Glass. I don't really have much to say about it, but and number eight is Sin After Sin. My number seven is Point of Entry. Sorry. Number six, I got Ram It Down, which I think is a good album, but it seemed to get overshadowed by the next one, which is Painkiller. But first, my number five album, which I probably could have made this my number four too. But anyway, I got Hellbent for Leather, which some people might know as a killing machine, as I guess they changed and they were afraid that Americans didn't like killing, which is kind of weird. No offense, no offense. I mean, but they didn't think stores would sell it because it was called Killing Machine, so they called it Hell Bent for Leather instead. And then number four, which also has killer in the title, is Painkiller, of course. They were okay leaving that, I guess so, because I guess it's, I don't know if they're, t I forget what was Painkiller about. Is it about drugs? I can't even remember now.
Yeah, I'm trying to
Like a
think like
song.
lyrically. I thought it was like some kind of like creature, you know, something that was
Okay.
kind of like kind of taking over.
Okay, so my number three is this one, British Steel, the one we talked about today, is my number three. My number two is Screaming for Vengeance. And my number one is Defenders of the Faith, as I don't know, I like that one better. Okay, that's it for me. Let's hear your top 10, and you feel free to expand more than what I did in mine.
I probably won't talk a whole lot, but you know,
Okay.
it's funny because I've been going back and forth with Painkiller because sometimes, you know, you remember albums like a certain way and then you go and listen to them and then you like rank them differently. So that one's not going to be number 10, by the way. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You mentioned like Point of Entry. I don't have that on my list, but there are a few couple good songs. There are some good songs on there. I always liked Heading Out to the Highway. I like the live version too. But my number 10 is Angel of Retribution. That's when Rob Halford rejoined Priest. And they released like track six is Demonizer. Man, it is one of Priest's heaviest songs. There are some just nasty like pinch harmonics on that one. And some really aggressive. The double bass definitely has like a speed slash thrash metal vibe to it. And then Lotness is over, I want to say it's over 10 minutes long. I haven't looked at the title, the track in a while, but it's at least 8 minutes. It's a long tune, but it's really well written. And Priest isn't known for writing really long songs typically, but that's an awesome song. Number nine is one that I've actually got in rotation, although it came out in 2018. I'm giving Firepower a little bit more spinning. I was listening to it on I went on a walk there a couple few weeks back, and I think the album is sensational, actually. It's really good, but Necromancer is pretty heavy. It's driving. Children of the Sun, super catchy. I mean, Children of the Sun could be something from like the early 80s Priest, just about. But I recommend Firepower for you, Blake. That's one that I'll definitely continue listening to that for a while.
I think I did listen to that a few times. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel kind of guilty for having Sad Wings of Destiny so low because it's a highly influential album in the early 70s, but it was hurt by the production, so the production isn't the best. The guitars don't sound really menacing at all, but the opening track is Victim of Changes, one of my absolute favorite not only Priest but heavy metal songs of all time. So I got to give it its due. And the Ripper, I mean, if you haven't heard the Ripper, go pull that up. It's a great tune with some awesome guitar harmonies and some shrieks too by Mr. Rob Halford. Number seven, Stained Class. We've got some Saints in Hell. We have Exciter, which is another, whoo, man, Exciter. That's another one on Unleashed in the East. They played even faster. That's a speed metal song if I've ever heard it. Great riffing, awesome soloing, and I mean, Halford shines. The drumming is actually really awesome on that too. He definitely smashes some cymbals and the China Boys on that one. Number six, Sin After Sin. I initially did have this a little bit higher, but obviously you're very familiar with Slayer. They did, I thought, an excellent cover of Dissident Aggressor. I do love the original. Just I give it an edge to Priest since they wrote it. Yeah, Halford hits those ultra high notes that the boys in Slayer, they bend the notes up to. And you got Diamonds and Rust, man. What an absolute killing song, man. It's great. Catchy too. Number five, this one climbed the list. Painkiller. We were talking about it earlier. This one just brought this like renewed energy for the band and really helped them out financially. It definitely picked up some of the kids, some of the fans that are into maybe heavier thrash music, maybe a thrash or groove metal music, maybe even a little bit of death metal fans. And the title track is In Your Face, great double bass playing, awesome pinch harmonics, and Halford shrieking. Nightcrawler is one of my top tracks off that album. It's kind of a creepy tune. Love the intro to it. Pretty catchy and driving too. The last time I saw Priest, they actually opened with Leather Rebel, so that's one that that kind of bumped up on my list. That's a great tune. There, actually, I could talk about Painkiller for a while, honestly. And you actually even threw that out there for a podcast. Maybe another time. I had to go with British Steel. That one's
Yeah.
somewhere up on this list. Number four, Screaming for Vengeance. Oh my goodness, this is one of the first albums I picked up by them. Riding on the Wind, the title track, the Hellion, Electric Eye. Man, what an intro. That's one of the coolest intros for any album. That just leads you right into the Electric Eye. And I remember I forced a couple buddies of mine. Like one of them, I got into some metal music. They were both jocks, they were both athletes and stuff, but we ended up skipping school one time. I can't tell you what the video cassette's called, but I had the VHS of a Priest, and it was a live concert, and it actually had Priest Screaming for Vengeance on there, and they're just wailing away. And Brandon's like, "Wait, what are we doing here, man?" My buddy Sam's like, "No, this is good stuff. Give it a chance." And they were just wailing, man, and you can tell, like, my one buddy's. He's a basketball player. He was just like, I'm not really sure. I said, hey, just check out the guitar solos, if anything. But yeah, we had a good time. So that's Screaming number four, Hellbent for Leather. Yes, AKA Killing Machine number three. The title track is one of their best. Green Men Unleashing. We talked about it briefly. It's a remake, but wow, what an awesome track. And if you haven't heard me talk enough about Unleashed in the East, just go download it. This version on the Unleashed in the East, I'd say, is gives it a slight edge. The studio version is excellent, though. Number two, Defenders of the Faith. I didn't even put notes in this one. Defenders of the Faith. Listen to it from the top, from beginning to end. Such an awesome song. I do feel like you'll never. I don't know. You know what? I don't know if I hate to put you on the spot, but I am curious how many times like Eat Me Alive has been played live. That's a really heavy, I mean, it's definitely like a speed metal thrash metal song, but just with
Well,
somebody who has like some operatic, I mean, Halford's range, especially back then, was otherworldly. I mean, just awesome guitar soloing on that whole album though. I mean, great songs. The Sentinel, I mean, what a kick-ass song.
and Free Will Burning. Eat Me Alive has actually only been played 102 times live.
Yeah, I thought that track would be way down there,
The
but that's great. But yeah, Free
second
Will
least
Burning,
from that album.
Yeah, Free Will Burning, I meant to actually mention to a guitar student of mine, because that one's like, whoo, that one's breakneck speed, as you know, as well.
Yeah.
Great tune. Number one, we've talked about the album, we've covered it, so I probably don't need to say too much. I might have to have a drink of tea because I've been talking so much and not inhaling enough oxygen. But British Steel, my number one Priest album. This is my absolute favorite Priest album. There are no flaws in this on this album. I know United is not a crowd pleaser, but it fits on this album. You don't have to be old to be wise. Yes, it's not going to be an encore, but I mean, you got Rapid Fire, you got Metal Gods, Grinder, Steeler, man. There are guitar players living and breathing right now that would like give their left arm to be able to write a song as great as Steeler, you know? Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you covered it. I mean, we talked about it before, but Living After Midnight, great anthem, Breaking the Law. It's a fun song, you know? But yeah, what an album.
Okay, that's a good list.
Thank you. I like yours too. And I knew we would have some that were different. I didn't
Yeah.
expect Turbo from you, but I have a
Well,
friend that really likes Turbo a lot. I had a hard time getting into it. I like some of the Turbo stuff live on Priest Live a bit more than the studio for whatever it's worth. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, I never like I don't really listen to Turbo anymore. Like probably a lot, like I probably only listen to, I don't know, the top, my top six, maybe top five once in a while. I'll throw them on there, but probably like some of the ones, even Sin After Sin, except for when I had to do the podcast, I listened to it. But Stained Glass, I haven't listened to in a while, but I might pick out a song here and there to listen to sometimes. But
Out in the Cold's a good one. Do you like that one off Turbo? I do like Out in the Cold.
Yeah, I don't have the song list in front of me, but yeah, there's a few on there that, again, I wish there was no synthesizer stuff on it,
It's a little prominent on that album.
but whatever, yeah. Okay. And well, I guess we'll end this, but I do want to say a few things here. So we're going to continue with this format most of the time. We're going to do a classic metal album. I'm going to try to get guests in from bands more often if I can, and either pick out an album, and we might also just have interviews on the podcast too. So if there's an interview with a band, we'll maybe just throw that on a podcast episode instead of doing an album thing. But it would be great to have some musicians want to do this too, and some of them do, but we'll get more of that hopefully on season three here. And I had an idea of last season, but we just haven't got around to it yet. We're going to try to maybe put a band's album versus another, for example. Like we could take say Screaming for Vengeance from Judas Priest and put it head to head against Iron Maiden's Power Slave or something like that.
I
Like
like
trying to
that.
take two groups, or like put a Metallica album against Slayer or something like that. Like
Megadeth.
trying to mix the genres and try to see what we think we like the best or whatever. And that's another thing. People listening to what we did with the Thrash podcast, we wanted people to give us their lists. And feel free, if you listen to us on YouTube, then comment your favorite Judas Priest albums if you want, or your favorite songs from this album that we did the episode on. Feel free to leave comments on albums you'd like to hear us do an episode on, or if you want to be maybe a guest on a podcast, send me an email, which I don't think I mentioned at the start, to podcast@themetalpit.org, or you can email me also info@themetalpit.org. And we do it. One of our writers had an idea about doing a podcast episode about cover songs. We might do that sometime, about metal cover songs, or bands that just like the Green Man Lichi, which is Fleetwood Mac song. Stuff like that. And also about the website, if you're interested, it's all volunteer, but if you want to write album reviews, maybe be a guest on a podcast, send me an email about that. And if you're a photographer, maybe getting into taking metal concert photos and you're looking for a place to showcase your work, get in touch with me and we might be able to work something out and have more people see your stuff. So I think that's it. So thanks, Eric, for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Blake.
And thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you again next week, I hope. Thanks. Bye.